buzzer has sounded, we are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, it's overtime with William Pattison, Dawson Wise, and Jace Brown joining you on a Monday after a big weekend in sports. We are so happy you are joining us today. 865-288-3131 if you want to call in and join. A big week of sports. We had the NFL draft and the NBA playoffs. Dawson in the second hour has some things to get off his chest about the Phoenix Suns. And we'll dive into Joe Milton, Kamal Haddon, Jalen Wright getting drafted in the second hour as well. But in this first hour, we'll talk about the baseballs. They pull out the brooms on Missouri. As always, we'll give our best bets as well. But first things first, presented by the 37 Club, which provides access to unique content, exclusive events, private communities, and special discounts on Fan Run merchandise. Join on fanrunradio.com today. And today's first things first topic is the Vols add Igor Milicic. Charlotte transfer Igor Milicic Jr. committed to Tennessee basketball on Monday morning. CBS Sports' John Rothstein first reported it and his source that confirmed with us. Milicic committed to Rick Barnes and his staff after taking visits to Nebraska and Baylor in addition to Tennessee. Milicic stands at 6'10", 225, and played his freshman season at Virginia before transferring to Charlotte and played two seasons for the 49ers. As a junior, last year Milicic averaged 12.8 points and 8.5 rebounds per game. He was a very efficient scorer, shooting 49% from the field and made 56 three-pointers at a 38% clip. Playing in the American Athletic Conference last season, Charlotte played three ranked teams. Milicic totaled 8 points and 6 rebounds against Duke, 13 points and 5 rebounds against Florida Atlantic, and 8 points and 5 rebounds against South Florida. Now, something to note about the Charlotte team, and we had Jordan on here on Friday, and he was talking about how Charlotte played a very, very, very slow offense. You know, a lot of setting up in the half court, not a lot of pace, very different from what we saw last year with Tennessee. So Milicic is a guy that's a little bit different than we've ever seen here before at Tennessee, a guy that can stretch the floor, 6'10 forward, very lanky, very lengthy, but poses some great athleticism at the same time being able to space the floor at that 4-5 position. So Milicic adds something that we've never seen before at Tennessee, but I think he plays into this offense very well. I don't think he'll be a starter, but I think he can come off the bench and provide that space and give Tennessee a little bit of a different flavor than anyone else on the roster boasts. So I think he'll fit in very well, especially a guy that shoots 38% from three and made 56 threes last year. That's really nice. Shot 49% on the season. That's very efficient. So I think the theme in the portal so far for Tennessee has been getting guys that are efficient from the field and efficient from the three-point line. And Milicic adds that to your roster. I think that's a good addition. What do you think Milicic adds to this roster, Dawson?
Size at the four spot, number one. I mean, you needed to get bigger in general, number one. I mean, we've talked about the lack of size before, but also replace that physical presence of Triple J. You already did that with Dubart. Now you do it double with Milicic. Now you have two guys.
Yes.
They give you that physical advantage. Big imposing physical force. He can play bully ball if he needs to, which is going to help when you play physical defense like we like to do, like Rick Barnes likes to do. That's gonna help a lot. He gives you elite scoring. I mean, this is a big-time scorer, especially from beyond the arc. Look, this is the way basketball is going. We talked about it last week. You need bigs that can shoot the three, stretch the floor, space things out. Milicic is that kind of guy. He's going to space the floor. He's going to be able to create some space for other guys, make defenders respect that range, and open up some opportunities potentially in the paint for Felix Akpara as well as Estrella as well. And then rebounding help. Again, this team struggled so badly at times last year with rebounding. They needed help. This guy averages 8 boards a game. Dubar's good at rebounding. Akpara's good at rebounding. You got so much help in that. Milicic, just another guy. You needed to improve in that specific stat. Milicic helps you there.
Yeah, like y'all have hit on, it brings length to that four, and if you slot him to a five, you can really stretch the floor there, open up some spacing as well for a guy like Dubar, who you know has been known to work inside and out. I think that's one thing that he brings. He's also not afraid to go inside. I think Jordan Moore posted a video earlier of him posterizing some guy earlier, so he's got that ability as well. And you know, like you said, Dawson, needed depth down there at the 4-5, some extra size. One thing that I'm really excited to see is maybe a different offensive scheme with him out on the floor. Tennessee's so used to having these bigs that sort of roam the paint and stay down low. Maybe some, Jonas Adu jumpers from, 15 feet or so. I think him being out there and being able to, hit the perimeter if you need to, I'm really excited to see how Coach Barnes implements sort of a new play style out there.
Yeah, so it's important to keep in mind the Volunteers lost both Jonas Adu and Toby Awaka. Fun fact, saw Jonas Adu at Chipotle today in Knoxville. Seems to be in good spirits. He's wearing red. I know there's been some talk about him maybe going to Arkansas. Maybe he's already kind of flaunting that on the streets of Cumberland Avenue. However, both those guys go to the portal. Toby Awaka committed today to Arizona. So Tennessee was faced with adding some interior size to pair with sophomore J.P. Estrella that we think very highly of, and so does the coaching staff. But you needed to add in a couple of those guys to fill in the roles of Jonas Adu and Toby Awaka. Now the Vols have added Felix Okpara from Ohio State. We broke him down last week. And now you add Milicic to the roster today. In terms of the Vols understanding the assignment of having to retool this roster, I think they've done well. You add Okpara, who's a defensive anchor, right? He's going to get it done defensively, really good shot blocker, an interior presence, an interior force, that is. Jonas Adu, very finesse, really good season last year, but lost a lot of matchups down low against some of the best offensive players in the country. Felix Okpara, I think, will now kind of counter the opposing team's offense by being that defensive anchor down low. Milicic is totally different than Toby Awaka. Awaka is a guy that, is undersized, will bang around down low. Milicic is a guy that's mostly going to be out around the perimeter and be able to knock in, triples and shots from a very high percentage. So it's a little bit different, but I like it because it's moving towards modern college basketball. And it's moving towards shooting and pace, and that's what Tennessee demonstrated last year, the highest pace numbers Rick Barnes has ever had at Tennessee last year. Now upping that up a little bit, adding guys that can make it even more imposing of an offense. So Okpara gives you defense, Milicic gives you more offense. I think the Vols have done a really good job in retooling their bigs.
Yeah, I think I would have, the only thing I probably would say would be maybe one more dedicated center. I know you get Okpara, and that's huge. You're going to have him and Estrella. They're going to platoon those minutes. That's going to work very well. But even without another center, you've gotten that physical mentality down low now, which you needed. You got the size down low, which you needed. You filled that gap this offseason. No complaints from me. You've done a good job offensively. Mm-hmm. This is a really good offensive class in terms of guys that are going to be playing down low, with Dubar and Milicic especially, but with Okpara as well. He can get to the rim. He can throw it down at the cup. He's a relatively efficient scorer. But add in Milicic and Dubar's electric offense, three-level offense.
Yeah.
You've done a really good job offensively in terms of getting those guys and rebounding help as well. We talked about it with our bigs. We need them to go up and get more rebounds. We had that complaint with Adu and Awaka last year. You filled that gap. No complaints from me at all.
Yeah, I think even before Milicic committed, I think the Vols have answered that question of, yes, they have rebuilt the bigs down there. I mean, keeping Estrella was huge, a guy that can get it done on both ends of the court, even though he is still fairly new out there, still hasn't had too many reps, but him being able to evolve and get into more of a high-profile role in this offense and defense is going to be huge. Getting a guy like Okpara, especially on the defensive end, like y'all have said, is going to be huge. Sort of replacing that spark guy, if not being the spark guy just to start out there, being able to just roam the paint and just be a menace down there. That 2.5 blocks is no slouch. And like you said, Dawson, getting a guy like Dubar that's really going to slide into that four spot nicely on the defensive end and really going to be able to stretch the floor on the offensive end as well. I mean, he shoots great from three, sits at like 38% or whatever we had been talking about, puts in 18 points a game, high caliber scorer and very efficient on the offensive end. And then you throw in a guy like Milicic out there. I mean, you can get two guys that are I guess, classified as fours out there with him and Dubar. I think if you put those two guys out there, that can really spell some, you know, any defensive effort that you throw out there.
So Milicic joins Akpara, Darlin Stone Dubar out of Hofstra, who committed a couple weeks ago, and freshman prep star Bishop Boswell as players joining the Vols roster coming into the new season. The Vols are still expected to land Chaz Lanier of North Florida from the portal as well, and I think that'd be the cherry on top of this class. Obviously, Lanier's kind of going through the NBA process, so don't really expect him to commit anytime soon, but I expect it later on in May. But if they're able to add Chaz Lanier to this group, I think that is a huge, huge deal. And I think it all goes back into what Rick Barnes has proved this offseason. You know, last year, I think he had to adapt to what college basketball is in 2024. The first, you know, I guess the last four seasons, outside of last year, it's been a lot of half-court offense, slowing down the pace, and relying on your defense. And Tennessee's defense has always been really good, and it wins you games. But the offense would be too big of a liability, especially when you're playing against teams that now boast a ton of three-point shooting, a ton of pace. It's hard to counter that with your defense when your offense isn't able to get that same production. Last season, we saw an uptick in pace. We saw an uptick in three-point shooting, modernizing this team. And I think this offseason, we've seen the exact same from Rick Barnes in keying in on guys that fit a certain criteria, guys that are efficient from the field, guys that are efficient from three. Obviously, Milicic did not play in a very modern-style offense last year. That doesn't mean he can't do that with this group. You've already got a foundation of guys like Sakai Ziegler around, guys like Meshack around, Ganey. You've got a foundation. Now you're just adding bits and pieces to help make you have a full roster that makes sense. I think Rick Barnes has done that, and now I think we've seen him make that adjustment, make that pivot to adapting to what college basketball is now. And I think that's what he's proved so far in the portal.
Yeah, I completely agree. Continuing to adapt. I mean, we talked about that some coaches haven't figured this whole transfer portal thing out yet. Rick Barnes is not one of those guys.
Yeah.
He's absolutely figured this out now. I mean, he's using it to his advantage. I mean, even in a year where you really got to retool this team. I mean, you're losing a lot of production,
yeah,
a lot of veteran leadership. Mm. You need to go get those guys to replace them. He did it, and did it quickly, might I add. I mean, this was a class that came together really in a very short amount of time, all things considered. Also, feels like he's adapting stylistically. I know you alluded to it, the little bit faster offense. Now you're getting a stretch big that can shoot the three. That's something we haven't seen under Rick Barnes yet.
Yeah.
It's something you needed to have. So, you know, I like that you're going towards that up-tempo, jump shot first game, mm-hmm, where you're not – feeding it down low to your center first, like where we'd see him play inside out,
yeah,
with Jonas Adu, and then look outside of the three. Now, every guy on the court's going to be able to shoot the three.
Yeah.
Every guy's going to be able to spot up and shoot.
Yeah.
So many more options, and allows you to run a little bit quicker tempo. He's adapting stylistically as well. And finally, he's not slowing down anytime soon.
No.
We talked about, I think a couple weeks ago, we kind of talked about, okay, when's Rick Barnes going to get tired of this transfer portal thing? Well, I think he's proven with this class it's not this year, and it's not anytime soon,
yeah,
because he went out, and again, like I said, quickly retooled this team and got it ready to be good again next year. I think he's even more motivated than before, mm-hmm, now that he knows he can do it. He went and got Dalton Knecht. Oh, hey, I know how to use this thing.
Yeah.
I know how to,
yeah,
find talent. He went and did it, and he's proven that he's not slowing down anytime soon.
Yeah, he's absolutely one of the best adapted coaches, especially, like y'all have said, in the NIL transfer era. I mean, with all the money talk, it feels like he's just been able to, you know, swing every person that he wants to. I know, you know, he wasn't able to get a guy like Cade Tyson out of Belmont, which would have been a crazy addition to this offense. But, you know, picking up, like, the premier pieces such as Dubar, Milicic, I think is going to be a really big swing piece. Akpara was, you know, out of the three, I said he was the most important, and he went out and got a solidified big that knows how to, you know, push some buttons. I think, you know, him being able to do that very consistently so far in this new era, as well as still be able to go at the high school level, get a four-star blue chip guy like Bishop Boswell, I think it only just speaks to how long I think, or I guess just how consistent he's going to be at this. And, you know, throughout these 3 years, I mean, you got to give some credit to the assistants too. I know Justin Ganey's been out there as well. I know Rod Clark was a pivotal piece for bringing in Connect. So I think him being surrounded by guys that are willing to go out there and make things happen with alongside him, I think it's a perfect recipe.
Yeah, you know, we've seen a lot of coaches struggle to adapt recently, like Penny Hardaway at Memphis, right? It goes all in on the portal. Doesn't really work like that. Even Eric Musselman this last year at Arkansas went all in on the portal. Doesn't really work like that. And then you have other coaches who kind of try to stick to the same formula that they've had, like a John Calipari at Kentucky. Okay, I'm going to continue to win with these high school guys. Well, it doesn't really look like that either. But Rick Barnes has gotten a foundation of guys, the glue guys on the team, like a ZZ, like a Mayshak, like a JP Estrella. So you've got your core. Now it's just fine-tuning, adding the pieces in. And I think Rick Barnes, that formula is paying dividends, and that's why we saw this team last year have a lot of success. And I think that's why this team this upcoming year will have a lot of success, because Barnes has the right formula and understands how to win with the portal, but at the same time keeping your foundation of the team you have. So kind of going back to Chaz Lanier here, and this is a guy we've been all over for months, really ever since the portal, really even before the portal opened, we were already kind of keyed in on Chaz Lanier. Now he's got a couple crystal balls to Tennessee, seems to be expected to join. Currently, as it stands right now, without Chaz Lanier, Tennessee has the 7th best roster in college basketball. Now, if Lanier were to be added, that's a top 5 roster in college basketball, according to Bartorvik. So if the Vols are able to land Lanier, what should the expectation be for next season?
I think at the very least, contend in the SEC and make it back to the second weekend. At the absolute least. And that's, you know, I'm being very conservative with that, because you got a lot of transfers this year. You know, it's not like you bring in Dalton Connect and add him to a team you already had. This is going to be a lot newer of a team. So you're not sure exactly how it's going to all pan out yet. But based on talent alone, you at least should be back on the second weekend. You at least should be in the top 8-10 teams in the country again. I would expect nothing less. You got to pick up where you left off. You got so much momentum coming out of last year, coming out of the first Elite Eight run in a decade. Go do it again. Go back to where you were. Get a step further even. Continue to just build on what you've been building and keep up the forward momentum.
I think being able to contend in the SEC is by far up there. I'd like to see another, you know, big time offense. I think compared to last season, I think this year's team has a chance to take that even further. Maybe get up there in like the top 20 in offensive efficiency. Because you know, you've already brought in a guy like Dubar, who's dropping in 18-19 points a game. You get Milicic that can shoot the lights out from three. If you bring in a guy like Chaz Lanier, who's averaging about 20, can get you 5 assists alongside Ziegler. I mean, I think the expectations should be through the roof on the offensive end. Now, there's probably going to be a couple questions on the defensive end, again, with probably bigger minutes from Estrella being out there, and some guys like Gainey still on the team. You know, didn't have the greatest year this year on the defensive end. That's still going to spell some question marks, but I think on the side of offensive efficiency, I think it should be one of the best that we've seen out of Tennessee.
Yeah, big expectations I think should be expected if Lanier is able to be added to this roster. Excuse me. I've got something wrong with my throat, man. I can't even talk. All right, I'm going to drink a glass of water here at the break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the Basevols bringing out the brooms against Missouri when we return on Overtime.
Are you in need of a smile makeover? Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Costa at Knoxville Smiles, and if you're ready to improve your smile, replace teeth that are missing, make your dentures tighter, add implants to your mouth, whatever you may need, we're here to discuss a wide range of easy, pain-free cosmetic and restorative procedures that can create a glowing, radiant smile that you've always dreamed of. Don't wait any longer. The time is now. Call us today at Knoxville Smiles and schedule your appointment at 865-539-1776 or go online to KnoxvilleSmiles.com.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
Your tax refund belongs to you, not an identity thief. Over $6 billion in tax refunds were flagged by the IRS for possible identity theft last year. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. They monitor and alert you to identity threats you'd miss on your own, even if you're careful with your personal information. And if you do become a victim of tax-related identity fraud, LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists ready to help solve your identity theft issues. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Let LifeLock help protect your financial info, so all you have to worry about is what you do with your tax refund. Go to LifeLock.com, save up to 25% off your first year. The promo code is HERD, promo code H-E-R-D, to save up to 25% off your first year. LifeLock.com. Identity theft protection starts here.
Blackford Veterinary Surgery Referral specializes in surgeries not regularly performed by your pet's general veterinarian and currently accepts referrals from vets all across the country. With their newly renovated state-of-the-art surgery center and their highly trained staff, clients can rely on professional and thorough care. If your vet says that your pet needs surgery or rehabilitation, ask for a referral to Blackford Vet and let them get your best friend back on its feet. Located conveniently in West Knoxville. For more information, visit BlackfordVetSurgery.com.
It's baseball season, meaning summer's just around the corner, and your friends at Fan Run Radio are here to help you kick off summer right at the ballpark. Join us for our first ever Fan Run Night at Smoky Stadium on May 30th. Besides the game with Chattanooga, there will be in-game activities, $3 beers for Thirsty Thursday, and you'll get to do it all with the Fan Run team. Also, 37 club members get free admission to the game. So keep it locked in on Fan Run Radio for more details to follow and save the date for May 30th.
7:30 in the night. Ooh, ooh. I get those goosebumps every time. Yeah.
All right, back here on Overtime. Rehydrated during the break. Hopefully no more voice cracks this time. I don't know. I guess it's the... how is pollen? Is pollen still out right now?
It doesn't it was, look like it, but it feels like it.
Yeah, it was bad last week. I just every time I walked outside, my truck was covered in it. It was.
I'll tell you what. Spring is probably my least favorite season because of the pollen.
Oh yeah,
it drives me
absolutely
insane. And I'll tell you who else drove a team insane. That was Tennessee driving Missouri insane this weekend. As number 3 Tennessee improves to 37-7 on the year, 15-6 in SEC play, completed a series sweep against Missouri on Saturday. It was another quiet afternoon for Tennessee's baseball offense, but its pitching came through as the Vols earned a 3-2 victory to complete the series sweep of Missouri. Tennessee scored 3 runs in the first inning and held on to the win thanks to strong pitching and Missouri's base running, having a couple of blunders there. So help the Vols out. We don't mind. Things didn't start well for Tennessee left-handed pitcher Xander Seacrest, but before he recorded even an out, he allowed a single, a stolen base, and an RBI single up the middle. The second line drive hit Seacrest's hand and led to trainer Jeff Wood coming out to take a look at him. But from then on, Seacrest got into rhythm, retired 10 of the next 11 batters he faced, and saw little adversity through his first four innings pitched. Things went a little haywire for Seacrest in the fifth inning when he allowed back-to-back walks to open up the inning, which ended his day. But overall, a nice outing, way to recover for Seacrest. Seacrest pitched a total of 69 pitches, including 42 strikes against 17 batters. Tennessee recorded 7 hits in the contest, including 2 by Christian Moore and Kavaris Tears. Kirby Cannell pitched the final 2 innings in relief for the Vols and earned his 3rd save of the season. So takeaways from Saturday. Now, this week was played Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Did y'all kind of like that little switch up?
It's okay.
Very crowded Thursday night to have.
Yeah, Thursday.
I was just saying, like, crowded sports night. Like, draft.
The NFL draft, was kind of weird. Yeah,
draft, playoffs, baseball. I mean,
week might be better now there's no NFL draft on Thursday. Might like it a little bit better.
Yeah. So a little bit of an adjustment there. So takeaways from Saturday. Guys, we'll begin with Dawson.
The most obvious is the pitching, right? I mean, it continues to find its stride. We've had questions about pitching all year, but for the past few weeks, they've answered those questions. They've answered the call. Again, another quality start from Xander Seacrest. I know it didn't begin the way he wanted it to.
Sure.
Certainly a really worrisome play, kind of a weird play where he kind of reached out his pitching hand to try to grab a line drive. Not sure.
Probably not the smartest thing to do.
Instincts are wild, I guess, out there. Yeah. But he's fine. Got a good outing. And then obviously Sneed and Cannell closing the door, slamming the door shut. Again, they've done that all year. No questions about them. But the pitching in general, just continues to get better. More confidence in this staff than ever before. Really great stuff from them, really all weekend, but Saturday especially. Yeah. The defense is tightening up. Props to Cal Stark.
Yes.
He had himself a heck of a night on Saturday, throwing guys out at second base. Dean Curley had a nice play as well throughout the lead runner with first and second, potentially a threat brewing for Missouri. Curley made the smart play, didn't try to turn a double play and force it, went to third, got the out, and they got out of the inning without giving up any damage. So big moments on defense. It tightened up. I know Blake Burke had a big play this weekend as well, threw out a guy at home plate. Really smart, just smart play from the defense. Not as many lapses as we're used to.
Yeah.
Kind of used to the infield having a couple errors, the outfield having a couple moments. Never happened this weekend. Another problem solved, and another really fast start. This team is so – and any team is good when they get a good start. This team seems like it is completely locked down. If they have a good first inning, it feels like the game's over.
Yeah.
Because the pitching's found its stride, and if the bats get going early, it's typically enough of a lead to control the game. You got another good start at home and controlled home field. Really great stuff on Saturday.
Yeah, the biggest thing all weekend was pitching, like you said, Dawson. Sechrist came out there, got roughed up, like you said. But, you know, beyond that, he really did shut the lights out there throughout the rest of his tenure out there. Sneed threw pretty good. Combs had a couple good outings this weekend as well. He pitched great on Friday to close that game out and pitched about an inning on Saturday as well. And, of course, Kirby coming out there like the pirate he is, just, you know, taking all the doubloons that you got and just putting an end to any offensive prowess that you think you might have. He was great out there. But, like you said, the defense was the biggest piece. You know, I know Friday, Kavaris Tears made a great play, made a diving catch in right field, was able to turn two. When it looked like Mizzou was trying to strike back after the Vols got up a little bit. So, and like you said, Cal Stark, probably the player of the weekend, in my opinion, in the field at least. Felt like he was everywhere, made some great catches in foul ground as well. It was just all over the field. You know, when the bats aren't hot, it was great to see the Vols overcome that, I guess, lapse on the offensive end, come up with different ways to win.
Obviously wasn't the prettiest day at the plate for the Vols. But a gritty win nonetheless. You talk about the defense really tightening things up. Missouri's not a, you know, not one of the top tier teams in the SEC, but when you're not able to get that offense going like Tennessee has been able to do all year long and what this team is known for, you got to find a way to win. And this was a gritty win. What do you think this proves about this team, Dawson?
Well, I said it a couple weeks ago, this team can win all types of ball games. They can win the 16-11 game against Georgia, win 3-2 against Missouri. They can win these kinds of games now. We wondered if they could win when it's not a blowout, when it's not a slugfest, if it's a pitcher's duel and it's a close game and you need your staff to come through. Can they win those games? Yes, they can win those games, and they won two of them this weekend, which is really encouraging because this team the past couple years has not been able to win these close games. The pitcher's duels especially. Again, I look back to the Notre Dame series. Again, I look back to the LSU games in Omaha last year, where they just could not get that one extra run and then have the pitching maintain them all the way through the game. This team seems to be able to doing that, be able to be doing that. The pitching, again, is getting better. They're finding answers. Where they weren't earlier, they are now. It took a while. We've got something with this rotation, especially on Friday, or, well, game one. It was Thursday this past weekend with Stamos and A.J. Causey. I like that a lot, especially until A.J. Russell comes back. I like that combo, and I like that they're just – constantly tweaking, finding answers, finding something that works, finding guys that can get a big out. That's huge as well. And finally, we're in for some high blood pressure in some of these games if it's going to come down to this later in the year.
Yeah, you know, you say that. I mean, this team leads the country in home runs. Like, once again, that was the most impressive part was, you know, when you take out that humongous facet that you have in your game, if you're Tennessee, and you're still able to find a way to win against an SEC-quality opponent, I think it's huge. I know Kirby Cannell said in the press conference on Saturday that it was really huge, especially for guys such as Dean Curley that are freshmen, Ariel Antigua, guys like that, to get the feel of a game that really mirrors that of, like, a regional or super regional game where it's down to one or two runs in the eighth and ninth inning, and you really have to pull through and be able to just overcome that sort of pressure. I think that was a big sort of learning point for them this weekend. He said that in, like, their post game huddles in the outfield, that was a big thing. Was, you know, it's sort of a learning curve out there, and, you know, they were able to get that under their belt. I think Dean Curley said that's going to be something that he's excited to finally have there, and just another tool in his belt is what he said. So I think them being able to, you know, like we've talked about before, find different ways to win, whether it be, you know, smoking the ball out of the ballpark 6-7 times a game, just outpacing a team, like you said, 16-11, or blowing somebody out or keeping it low scoring. I think it only just adds to just how good this team is with all the talent base that is there and all the veterans on the team.
865-288-3131, talking the Vols sweep of Missouri on Saturday. So is the second series sweep against an SEC opponent this season. The first was at home against LSU, another Tigers team, on April 12th through the 14th. In comparison, the Vols had three SEC sweeps last season. And it's important to note, kind of looking at the standings, because we're getting to that point of the year where the standings and, you know, who can win the regular season championship is on the line. The Vols are just one game back from Kentucky from being the leader in the SEC. Looking at the remaining schedule, can the Vols take home the SEC regular season crown?
First and foremost, you got to take care of your business. It doesn't matter what Kentucky does or Arkansas does or anybody does. If you go out and start falling flat in some of these series, you got three series left. And really, there's not an easy one, if you want to say it. I don't think there's really an easy series in the SEC, but we saw that this weekend. Missouri is not a top of the SEC team, and they drove Tennessee to the limit in two of those games. Really kept it close and made the Vols work for it. There's no easy series. You go at Florida this weekend. With the way they're hitting the ball, Caglione especially, that's going to be a tall task. Now, their pitching has been not what we expected out of that group this year, but – their lineup is very good, very talented, and is very good at slugging the baseball, which is what Tennessee does well also. But the pitching's going to have a test this weekend as well. After that, you come home, you play Vandy, which, yes, Vandy, again, in a down year, not having a great season, but it's Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
It's a rivalry.
Yeah.
That's a big series, especially at home. That could go either way with a Vanderbilt team like that. And then South Carolina, talented team, tough environment on the road in Columbia. That's a tough series as well. Two road series in the last three, that's not an easy draw.
No.
You got to go win games, go win series, win 6 out of 9 at the very least. Take care of your own business. Quick look at the opponent's schedules, just real quickly. Kentucky is home against Arkansas this weekend. That's a very tough draw.
Yeah.
At Florida, and then home against Vanderbilt. Very tough draw for the Wildcats. Arkansas is at Kentucky, home against Mississippi State, and at Texas A&M. Tough draw for them as well. A&M is at LSU, home, at Ole Miss, and home against Arkansas. And then Mississippi State is at Alabama, at Arkansas, and home against feisty Missouri, who was just in Knoxville. Those are really tough draws for everyone else.
Yeah.
You arguably have the easiest one, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Of those four teams, it's so important to take care of your business. But then you got to look and say, look, we got the easiest draw of anybody. Take care of your business, and you're going to win that title.
Yeah. You have, I think of all those like top three, four teams outside of Tennessee, which is Kentucky, Arkansas, and A&M, like you were saying. It's by far, I think you have three very winnable series. I mean, you know, Florida's had some ups and downs. I mean, they've been cursed by the midweek games all year long. They've struggled a little bit in SEC play. It feels like some games it's like the Jack Caglione show, and that's it. It feels like nobody's really, I guess, contributing on that on the offensive end for them sometimes. So I think going down to Florida this year, you're probably glad that you're on the road this season compared to, you know, maybe a last season when even Florida came up here and took 2 out of 3. And then you look down the road, you still got Vandy. They're always going to be feisty, but again, it's an in-state rival. You've had their number, it feels like, the last 3-4 years at this point. I think, you know, with the offense that you have, they've had some games where they cannot push runs across the board. I think that's something that you can take advantage of. And against South Carolina, they're sort of the same thing. They'll have really high highs. Like they went out and beat Kentucky in the series this weekend at home, which was huge for them and huge for Tennessee as well. So I think, you know, you get some highs and some lows, and, you know, maybe you can hit those you know, middle ground to valleys in a couple of these series. I think it's going to be big. I think the SEC regular season title is likely going to run down between Tennessee, Arkansas, and A&M, and it's really going to depend on who takes 2 out of 3 out of that Arkansas A&M series. That is going to be between the number one and number two teams in the country. probably the two best teams in the SEC outside of Tennessee, wherever you want to throw them in. I'm probably more excited about watching that as a season finale compared to Tennessee, South Carolina.
That's a heck of an A&M lineup against arguably the best pitching staff in the country in Arkansas, by the way.
Yeah, quick errors and omissions. When I was doing my homework, I was looking at the SEC East standings only, so it had Kentucky above. So it's Arkansas and Kentucky at the top at 16-5. Yes. A&M and Tennessee both one below at 15-6 in conference play. Quick errors and omissions real quick. All right, when we come back, we'll give our best bets of the night and take a look at a possible opportunity for the Lakers when we return on Overtime.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
I was afraid to cut the cord, but once I did, I couldn't believe it took so long to do it. Paying too much for my cable bill had become a bad habit. I either wasn't getting what I wanted or never knew where to find any of my favorite shows until it was too late. Plus, the prices just kept going up. Thankfully, I discovered a new way to watch, called Philo. For just $25 a month, I can catch all my favorite shows on networks like BET, MTV, and TLC. It even has Nickelodeon for my kids. I can watch anytime I want, anywhere I want. Plus, Philo lets me have up to 3 streams at once, so everyone can watch what they want at the same time. Throw in the unlimited DVR that saves all my favorites for up to a year, and this really is the best deal in TV. I just wish I hadn't waited so long. Sound too good to be true? Well, try it out for yourself, and you'll see why people who love TV love Philo. Go to philo.tv, that's philo.tv, and start your 7-day free trial now.
Blackford Veterinary Surgery Referral specializes in surgeries not regularly performed by your pet's general veterinarian, and currently accepts referrals from vets all across the country. With their newly renovated state-of-the-art surgery center and their highly trained staff, clients can rely on professional and thorough care. If your vet says that your pet needs surgery or rehabilitation, ask for a referral to Blackford Vet and let them get your best friend back on its feet. Located conveniently in West Knoxville. For more information, visit BlackfordVetSurgery.com.
It's baseball season, meaning summer's just around the corner, and your friends at Fan Run Radio are here to help you kick off summer right at the ballpark. Join us for our first ever Fan Run night at Smoky Stadium on May 30th. Besides the game with Chattanooga, there will be in-game activities, $3 beers for Thirsty Thursday, and you'll get to do it all with the Fan Run team. Also, 37 club members get free admission to the game. So keep it locked in on Fan Run Radio for more details to follow, and save the date for May 30th.
All right, back here on Overtime. Time for our best bets of the night. And I'll begin in the association with the Thunder and Pelicans. I'm taking Thunder -4. The Pelicans will be headed to Galveston, Texas. They'll be headed to Galveston, Texas after tonight. Pelicans just are the clearly inferior opponent in this matchup. Thunder have played really, really well. They're getting it done on both ends. And the Pelicans, without Zion Williamson, really just don't have enough juice. Getting dominated down low. Jonas Valanciunas, a very finesse big. And I'm taking the Thunder. They've got the momentum. They played well. Pelicans don't have much to play for here. Thunder -4 seems safe to me.
I'm going on my wild player prop journey again for these three games tonight. We'll start in the same game. I'll go ahead and start with the Thunder Pelicans. Give me a combo. Shea, 2+3s, and an Oklahoma City win. You get that at +190. Shea's been on and off with the three ball. Did go 3-for-5 in game 2. Had a nice game. I think he's going to have to if they're going to win this series tonight on the road in New Orleans. They're going to need him to hit some big shots. I think he does. And at 2+, That's not that many. He's hit one in every game. He hit three in game two. I like that 2+3s, and I like Oklahoma City to win as well.
Yeah, I've got Thunder -4.5 tonight. You know, that they've been out Zion all series, and you can really tell over these last three games, none of them have really been really close at all. I know they had a two-point game, game one, but these last two have really been blowouts. And, you know, Shea has been averaging like 28.3 a game across this series. So I think they finish off the sweep tonight. And like you said, that they get to go play in that dirty-ass water down in Galveston.
My goodness.
Got to quote Charles Barkley.
Yeah, there we go. I'll take another Pelicans-Thunder bet here, and this is Pelicans team total under 100.5. The playoff pace has been very slow, 92.7 possessions per game for the Pelicans so far. Again, the Thunder have done a really good job defensively throwing off this Pelicans group. They've posted an offensive rating of 100 or better in just one game, have the Pelicans, and that's when that total went over in game two. So I'm going to take the team total under 100.5 here, just not enough juice for the Pelicans, and I think they'll be out of this thing very quickly.
I'll move to Boston and Miami. Give me Tatum and Adebayo to combine for 50-plus tonight at plus 170. Mm. Adebayo's been good in this series. Boston really doesn't have a ton of answers for him. But Tatum has been very good. He's cooking now. Really started to cook in game three, and he could get to 35. And this is a really nice value bet if Tatum gets to the 30-35 mark. If he can get up that way, Adebayo 10 or 15 seems reasonable, mm-hmm. considering who Miami still has out for this game. So I like those two to combine for 50-plus in tonight's game four.
Yeah, I'm also going down to Miami. I'm going to take the Heat +10.5 against the Celtics at home. I think they're going to score more than 84 points at home tonight. I know that spell on Saturday was just, you know, not their brand of basketball under Eric Spoelstra.
Tough to watch.
Very, very tough to watch. I think they bounce back, get a little bit more fight out of them. They're still out Terry Rozier with the neck injury. Jimmy Butler's going to be out at least a couple more weeks with that MCL sprain. Again, I think they'll keep it closer than Game 3, which is a 20-point loss, but I think the Celtics go back up to Boston with a two-game lead.
All right, my final best bet of the night is the under 205 in the Celtics-Heat game. Game 3 finished with a total of 188. Obviously, the Heat did not have that great of an offensive performance, but I think we'll see a lot similar tonight. Heat just don't have enough juice offensively, and the Celtics have really settled in now. I'm taking the under 205. And also, we've seen a very big trend so far in the playoffs of really good defense, especially when there's such a big mismatch. So I'm taking the under 205 here.
All right, final one for me, and I hate to do it. I'm going to Denver. It's another combo, Nuggets -7.5 and the under 218.5. The series moves back to Denver for Game 5. Both previous games in Denver went under the total tonight at 218.5. Likely that the Nuggets close this series. I think they do so not decisively in terms of a 25-point win, but 10, 12, 14, in which case I think it stays under 218.5, much like Game 2 did. I think that's what we're looking at tonight in Game 5. Nuggets -7.5 and under 218.5. Sorry about that one. Mm.
Another fun prop to do if you want. I think it's the Nuggets to trail by 10 or more and win. It's like +350.
Oh, I didn't see
plus
that
350,
one.
+350, that's free money.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also, I mean, I guess in game two, it was like +400. So it's just saying, like, you know, if they go down by 10, it could go either way. But, all right, let's head to the phones. Those are our best bets of the night. We've got Bruce on the line, 865-288-3131. What's up, Bruce?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Awesome. Staying with your theme on baseball for the Vols, who's most valuable player in your opinion? And I know there's probably more than one, so I guess who would be your two favorite most valuable players for this year? And can those individuals take us to the College World Series? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you've got a plethora of guys. I mean, obviously Christian Moore, Blake Burke, Billy Amick when he's been back in the lineup playing healthy. I think in terms of offense, I'd look at all three of those guys. Defensively, you know, I think you'd have to look at your pitching and kind of pick one of your best one. Really, the pitching group I think is the most valuable because you've got to get the best production out of them to go far in the tournament and I guess, you know, if you want to make it to Omaha, you've got to have consistent pitching. outside of that group, you know, who would you say is the most important, or is there really not one?
I mean, Christian Moore is the most valuable player, in my opinion,
yeah.
on the offensive side.
Yeah.
Pitching-wise, I think it's Nate Sneed, but I would give an honorable mention to Xander Sechrist because of what he's found on Sundays and how he shored up those issues on the Sundays, especially in conference play. I'd at least give him an honorable mention.
Yeah, I think for most valuable player on the offensive end, it's either got to be Simo just for his, you know, offensive production with all the power that he's put out. Might even slide Blake Burke in there. I know he set the program record for longest hit streak with 31 games. That fell apart this weekend against Missouri, but was able to turn it around on Sunday. But I think his consistency up at the plate has just been humongous. I think it's too big to overlook what he did for that offense during that long stretch. Now, for the pitching staff, That's probably, you know, the biggest question mark. I think I would honestly have to either agree with Sneed, or I might throw Kirby Cannell in there. I think him being thrown in such big spots where, you know, we're used to seeing him, you know, on a Sunday afternoon and that's it. Now he's been slided into, you know, throwing on like a Friday or a Saturday night in like the sixth, seventh inning and coming in and pitching four or five innings, which we haven't really seen across his whole career. I think him, you know, coming from pitching one or two innings, sometimes one batter last year, to now being able to have that longevity and veteran presence out there on the mound, I think that'd make him a candidate as well.
Okay, good. So switching over to basketball, just trying to get your opinion. And I'm happy for him, but it looks like Awaka is signing with Arizona.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously with the last 2 weeks with Barnes bringing in some bigger men, you know, I can really see why Awaka, you know, had to move on. Any comments on his move to Arizona and impact, or does that favor him?
I mean, in terms of this roster, I think as Tennessee's trying to move to a more modern style, Awaka's very limited outside of the paint, obviously undersized. So with the way that Tennessee's trying to play going forward, he just doesn't really fit. Now, obviously, you love Awaka, what he's done. You love him as a piece in certain moments, had some really big moments in the tournament. But when you kind of look at where Rick Barnes is going, you see a trend in guys that shoot from a efficient percentage from three and efficient percentage from the field. Awaka doesn't give you but one of those, and that's from the field. Can't stretch the floor. So the fit with this team wasn't going to work. Awaka moves on to Arizona. I really, they lose Omar Ballo, who was their center. I don't think Awaka will start. I really don't know what this Arizona roster looks like now with no Caleb Love, no Pelé Larson, no Amu Barlow, who's the other guy they lost, transferred to either Syracuse or Indiana. But they've lost basically their whole starting lineup. So maybe a walk as a starter at the four, but Arizona's lost a lot of pieces. So I really don't know what that roster looks like at the moment.
Okay. And then educate me. I'm not sure I'm familiar with this Lanier guy. Who's this Lanier guy, and then how great of a probability is grabbing him to sign?
Yeah, so Chaz Lanier is a junior out of North Florida. Played his high school basketball at Ensworth, was a Gatorade National, I guess a Tennessee Player of the Year candidate there, but was kind of overlooked because of COVID. You know, when he was coming out as a high schooler, COVID was going on, really hard to recruit and get a sense of where maybe guys that didn't make their jump until their junior or senior year as a high school basketball player. So Lanier's been playing at North Florida, one of the most efficient players in college basketball, was top 10 last year in offensive efficiency. A guy that can score at all three levels, can score off the dribble, can shoot well off the catch and shoot from three. This is a home run hit, and I think it's the biggest piece of the portal. Currently is ranked as the sixth best player in the portal right now. This is a guy that moves the needle from a second weekend to championship expectations, in my opinion. Lanier is that good, still testing the NBA waters. But from what I've been told and what we've been following is this guy's been considered a vital piece to this portal class for months. The staff believes that he is going to be a guy on this team. But, you know, obviously he's got to go through the process of, you know, being in the portal, hearing from other teams, hearing from other offers. But I expect Chaz Lanier to be a Tennessee Vol. Other people do as well. He's already been given a crystal ball in 24/7 to come to Tennessee. So I think it's a matter of when, not if. And I think it's because he's going through the NBA draft process, getting evaluation feedback from them. So I think I'd expect him to commit in May.
Okay, that's good feedback. And then one last question, and I'll hang up and listen. But flipping to the NBA, you know, LeBron James might be his last game tonight, with or without L.A. And then you've got Kevin Durant, which is in the same boat. Do you think there's a possibility that the two of them end up on the same team next year? And thank you.
We appreciate your call, Bruce. I do not expect Kevin Durant and LeBron to team up. I'd be surprised if Kevin Durant were able to find a way out of Phoenix. I think if anything, they'd try to move off of Beal before they even thought about moving Durant. But,
you
know,
can't.
And we'll talk about it a little bit later on. They don't have any assets.
They can't move off Beal. He did not waive his no-trade clause.
Yeah, okay, so he's got a no-trade clause.
They literally
too.
Cannot
right.
move off of him.
So they can't move off him. So I guess if they had to, they'd try to move Durant. But in terms of LeBron and Durant playing, and I forgot he had that no-trade clause, but I don't think there's any possibility. First off, you've got to find a team that can allow two max players and a contender. Really, the only team that is a contender – right now, that can allow another max player is New York, but they wouldn't be able to add two. So I don't think there's any way that they could be on the same team together. We'll talk more about Phoenix in the next hour. We'll talk about the Lakers as well. But, yeah, you know, it's just kind of the passing of the baton in the NBA. You know, Steph Curry doesn't make the playoffs once again this year. Durant gets swept. LeBron facing elimination in Game 5. It just shows that the NBA has gotten a lot better, and there are a lot of young players now that are kind of making their ascension, like Anthony Edwards, who was incredible in that series against Phoenix. I just think it's now we're kind of seeing the guys we've grown up on and the guys we've known for the last 10, 15 years are starting to kind of get caught up by some of these young guns, like a Jokic, who's not necessarily young, but you know what I mean. Some of these guys that are now coming on the rise. Kind of sad to think about. Let's hope tonight's not the last time we get to see LeBron play. And let's hope they win. I'd love to see him play another game, you know. But anyway, moving on real quick. We got about 2 minutes here. We don't really have the Lakers scheduled to talk about in the next hour. So just want a really quick touch on it. You know, do you think there's any possible way the Lakers can get it done? I think the reason why they won Game 4 is because they got the production from Austin Reeves, got the production from D'Lo, combined for 42 points. If they can get that again, I think they could win tonight. I think they play the better basketball in more of the quarters in this series. The Nuggets have just found a way to win and taken advantage of lackadaisical basketball late game from the Lakers.
Yeah, it's going to be two things. Number one's your role pieces. I actually thought about a D'Lo potential, you know, player prop in tonight's game, but he's just been too inconsistent. You need production from him and Reeves. You'd love to see a guy like Gabe Vincent get involved.
Mm-hmm.
Just have not seen it yet, man. It's so frustrating that you have that guy on your team and you see what he does and you still can't get him involved. If you can get him involved tonight, no better time than now. But you need those supporting pieces, and you just need to learn how to keep the lead in the fourth quarter and not blow the lead in the fourth quarter. You could have stolen at least one game in Denver with the lead. You know you can go up there and play well. You just got to do it for all four quarters instead of three and a half and convert it into 48 full minutes. And look, they can't. We said from the beginning of the series, this was going to be the toughest matchup for the Denver Nuggets is the LA Lakers. They can beat them. Will they? I don't know.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, sometimes late in the game, like you said, with all the struggles, it feels like Darvin Ham just puts down the clipboard and is like, hey, just, you know, ice this game, sit on it as long as you can and just, you know, cross your fingers. I think, you know, with role players starting, you know, to elevate their game a little bit, like you said, Austin Reeves and D'Lo finally in tandem had a great game together, both scoring 21 points the other night. I think, you know, you combine that and you have some sort of a game plan late rather than, you know, just go out there and play basketball. I think you can win it because sometimes it feels like Darvin Ham just, you know, will not use the challenge. He finally did the other night and, you know, something worked for him. So I think, you know, game plan, plus, you know, finally guys stepping up in the spotlight is going to be huge. I think, you know, you need more than 9 points from Rui Hachimura if you want to win on the road in Denver, as well as, you know, another decent night from both Reeves and D'Lo. I think your starters just have to play like starters. You don't really want to rely on the bench too much, but again, like you said, if you can get some more quality minutes out of Gabe Vincent, especially on the defensive end, I think you can pry for a game six.
All right, I'm going to work on clearing my throat and drinking some more water in the break. When we come back, we'll talk about Joe Milton, Jalen Wright, and Kamal Haddon, all selected in the 2024 NFL Draft. We'll break down their new teams and how they fit on those teams when we return here on Overtime.